Anybody else?
I've got enough. We have a sermon. So I'm not going to read them all either. I'll try to get through them all. I think we can. It means we'll go fast. And not answer any of them, really. But start an answer. How's that? And we can... This is good. This is good. If we... To get through them all, it's not going to be a lot of time for dialogue. If you feel like there's really something burning you want to say, especially if you're the one that asked the question and maybe I completely missed it, raise your hand and Karen will get you the microphone. And if we have enough time at the end, we'll have a little bit of time to go back to any questions that you want to get a little more into and share a little of your input. As always, though, I don't share the answers that you have to buy into. I will try to share my answers, but you are welcome to disagree. I trust you know that. Okay. Roger, what thing do you like learning about the most? Very good question, thank you. What I like learning about most is actually nature. And one of the things I'm sorry about is that I don't really have a scientific brain, so that there's a lot of stuff I don't really get. But I like to learn and try to learn. I wish I knew more of the science because it would help me develop my appreciation. So I try to learn what I can, and I like learning about the world. There's a lot I have to learn. Which of our principles is most likely to convince outsiders that this is the place for them? Okay. First of all, I really do believe that everybody, I hope, can find a spiritual home, and I don't think everybody's spiritual home would be here, although I think way more than we have here could find a spiritual home. So the three things come to mind for me. The bookends of our seven principles: belief in the inherent dignity and worth of all people, everybody, no matter what you do, no matter where you're born, no matter what you believe. The other bookend, that we're part of an interdependent web. We're not the only people that believe that, but I think that's really important about us. And then the third thing for me is the fact that we don't have a common creed, so we are a pluralistic spiritual community. And I think there's places for spiritual communities that have one belief, and I think there's definitely a place for a community like ours. Is the world going to end in October? Should we worry? It might. I don't think so. I think it will end eventually. Like the sun will burn us up. But that's a long time from now. And the only thing I think we have to worry about is what we as individuals and as a collective humanity are doing that could bring about the end of the world that works for us, that we can actually survive in. And I think there's a lot of things we do that are hastening that end. But if we go, other things will probably be fine. Cockroaches. And so, what is your favorite spiritual text from a non-Abrahamic religion? That's what I actually read, and I still don't. The poetry of Mary Oliver, Rumi, those two come to mind. Some of the Buddhist scriptures, some of the Hindu scriptures. I love the story of the Buddha and his thinking that everything was hunky-dory in the world from his palace upbringing and his discovery going beyond the walls that it wasn't. I love that. So quite a few. Is it wrong for a middle-aged man and a woman in her 20s to be together intimately as well as in other ways? And a follow-up, when will it stop raining? See, I don't know science, so I don't know why. For the last one, The first question is interesting. I can't be in a place of judging. There are plenty of people of different ages, plenty of couples that are just great. I couldn't condemn that out of hand. If there's a power differential, you know, it's in the workplace or something, that's a whole other matter. An age difference doesn't necessarily, that's not necessarily even part of it. But my thing is, when there's legitimate love, deep love, not perfect love, because none of us do that, but love, all right, I celebrate. Is there a way to inspire morality and ethics in politics? The only way I know is to vote for morality and ethics in candidates. Because most politicians like to get votes, I'm thinking that that's the way to do it. And we're all human, and politicians are human, and government leaders are human, but the accountability is the ballot box. These chairs are very uncomfortable for my old bones. Will there be better seating in our new sanctuary? That's a great question. I hope whoever asked that is sitting on one of the red chairs. And I hope that the red chairs leave this building forever when we move into the sanctuary. The story with the red chairs, as I know it, and this may be folklore, but the story that I heard is that we've got all of these red chairs for $100 from a church that was going under in Chicago. So it was a pretty good deal. Did we think we'd be using them for 40 years? I'm going to guess not. And I find them incredibly uncomfortable. I do like these new ones, though, and I think the plan is to get more of the new ones so we have 350 of all that type in there. And then we get chairs that actually could fold in here so that we can move them in and out. These red chairs are not easy to move in and out. How many of you know that I actually broke a rib moving these red chairs, I think, after Hattie's graduation party 2 years ago? I tripped over something in my yard, so I couldn't sue myself. But and the whole force of my fall went right here. And I didn't get it x-rayed, but I bet anything someday I'll get an x-ray and they'll say, did you know you had a broken rib once? No. Yes, I did, because it was really painful. So I hope we get rid of them. What is the first step to healing the growing political divide in our state and country? The only place I can start is trying to listen to each other. And I know that's hard. There's people I don't like to listen to. But if I can't start there, how is it going to happen? How is it going to happen? Somehow we got to talk together, be together, listen to each other. And I can only do that from my end. I can't control someone else listening to me. So I just have to work on, I'm going to try to listen to you. I hope you listen to me. It's up to you, but I'm going to try to listen to you. As you use, aren't we expected to ask out of the question box questions? I'm not sure what that means, and I don't want to out someone, but if you would be willing to tell me what that means. Chuck. All right. Thank you. And then part two, we'll get to, or question two. Oh, okay, good. Out of the box. Okay, jeez. Thank you. All right. We are out of the box, people. And it'll be really fun to see if a single question from this service was asked at the first. So far, I don't think so. If you were sitting among us, what penetrating questions would you ask? That's a great question. That's actually a stumper. I don't know. I'm sorry, I'll think about that. I'll try to come back next year and lead with what would be my question. Can you remind me of that? Okay. How have your attitudes, values, beliefs about money changed during your tenure here? When I came, I mean, I'm going to interpret this question as being about money in the context of a spiritual community. So when I first came here, I didn't really understand money in a congregation. I didn't learn anything about that in graduate school. Nothing. Like, nothing. Not even, here's how you could do a sermon on pledge drive day. Nothing. So I had to learn on my own, and what I realized, first of all, that it's something I need to learn about, and that it's something in spiritual community you have to talk about. Just like in a family, you have to talk about your money. How do you spend it? How you spend money is a spiritual expression. What do you value? And if you don't talk about it, you're just going to spend it here and there, and you're not going to live in a way that reflects your values in the way you spend your money. So in the same way, we have to talk about it. We have to be open about it. We don't have to pass the baskets, you know, the long baskets three times during the service to try to get more and more and feel like you're shaken down. But it is a reality here. When I first came, we like to say that the cost of membership is about $100, which would pay for the dues to our association and the newsletter. I remember thinking, what about the building? What about the staff? What about the copy machine? The cost of membership is not $100. It's you take the whole budget and divide it by your members. That'd be the cost of membership. Here, the cost of membership is about $1,000 per person if you take our budget and divide it by our membership. That's what it is. Some of us can give more than that, some less. That's all right. But hopefully we can all together end up giving about $1,000 on the average. $1,200, but somewhere in there. So it's not cheap. It's not $25 to NPR. Okay. Where were you when you first felt the vastness of the universe? I would say, and I've shared this story before, I was at the whole rainforest in the Olympic National Park, Washington State. And we had a ranger giving us a guided tour who was an incredibly spiritual person. Now, not inappropriately, he was on the government panel. But about the beauty and the immensity and the incredible awesomeness of nature. I remember the guy's name, David Edsel. How many of you remember a ranger's name from when you were 10? This guy was amazing, and it opened my mind. And go back to the first question. I think that comes from David Edsel. How do you determine your purpose in life or God's will or meaning? The only way I can do that is to try to stop and reflect. So through a spiritual discipline, what is my purpose today? And if I don't take the time to ask that question in a quiet space, I won't answer it. What do you think is the purpose of prayer? I did not put those two in order, but what I just said to me, try to figure out what am I supposed to do? What am I called to do by whatever is out there that's greater than me? I don't know what it is, but I know I'm not the end-all of the universe. What is it? The second purpose for me, and I've said this many times, for me it's gratitude. Again, because I didn't create all this. So what am I grateful for today? I'm even grateful for the rain. I'm grateful it didn't rain yesterday. And I'm grateful for the green. How do we improve intergenerational ministries in the 21st century? That's a great question, and we're really... The congregations like this are the one place where people of all ages have a shot at getting together. So how do we improve that? We try to figure out how to do that better. I think this last year, with Bridget Kramer's leadership, we've tried to do better in our services for all ages so that they connect better with all the ages. That's good. We're trying to help our youth group feel a part of the congregation beyond youth group. For years, we've been doing well with having a good feeling within the youth group, but it doesn't transcend beyond it, and then the youth graduate, and that's that. So that connection is really important. I hope that what we do in here can speak to people in their teens and 20s and 30s and 40s and whatever the first decade is, 60s, 80s, 90s. You look around and we have, we're a congregation that actually has a pretty good blend of ages, and it's a real, real great gift, and we have to do what we can to keep it. Once you lose it, it's really tough because people walk in and they say, there's no one my age here. I don't know that I want to be here. Pretty understandable. So that's a big one. I'm going to have to come back to that one in a sermon. Great sermon on how we should live by visiting minister last weekend. I wasn't here, but I heard it was good. How should we die? Should we hope to die in our sleep at 75 or live till 85 with health issues, treatments, and a tad more suffering? That's a good question. I have no idea. So for me, I'd love to not have a lot of suffering at the end. And I would probably opt to not get a lot of treatments that would involve increasing suffering. But that's me. I can't say that that's right for another person. If I'm this age and where I am in life, I might do everything I could to keep going, even if it meant suffering for a while. So I can't, that's a situational ethics question. What keeps you up at night? Not all that much. But what does, and this week there was a night where I was kept up, and it's just the loose ends, especially here. So that's hard. I was gone a week, and I couldn't catch up. If any of you have email in my inbox, I'm sorry. I'll get to it, but I've got about 500 messages in there. And this week, I just didn't get through it all. So that keeps me up, but not very often. How old is the church? This fellowship is a congregation. 1955 was the birth. This building was built in 1998. If you mean the UU, you know, Unitarian Universalism, I'd say between 500 and 2,000 years, depending on how you define it. Roger, what is the most is the thing you like most in church? Okay, it's going to seem trite, but you. Guess what? So I felt compelled at the end of the last service to just say I love you, and it's really true. All of you. I do. And I love being here. What were your major life events that developed your present spiritual journey? For me, the biggest one was being in a church that meant a lot to me. That made me want to be in a church that meant a lot to me as an adult and kind of led into this sort of work. That and David Edsel at the whole rainforest. This year marks the 50th year of the consolidation of the Unitarians and the Universalists. Looking back on these years, what are a few things that have been good because of the merger, and what are a few things that didn't go so well? So, yeah, this year we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Unitarian Universalist Association. One of the bad things is too long of a name. Related to that, though, a bad thing is that we often shorten it to Unitarian, and then we lop off half of this group that came together. Another thing that is too bad is that 50 years later, we have a much smaller percentage of the United States population in our membership. I don't get that. I think that's because we screwed up, because I think our message should speak to a lot of people. The good things is that I think there's a lot in Unitarianism that's a blessing to Universalism, and there's blessings in Universalism to Unitarianism. And it was a merger where everybody, every single congregation actually joined in. United Church of Christ, there are plenty of congregational churches, for example, that said, we don't want to do that. So when you hear congregational, is that in the United Church of Christ, isn't that? You know, you don't know. With UU, you know, every single one joined. I like that. Who is your favorite celebrity and why? Okay, I'm going to come back to that because I've drawn a blank. What significant life event has most influenced your ministry? Also, why did my pen die when writing that question? I don't know. For me, and I've preached about it before, the death of my grandfather at my home when I was a kid. He was in hospice care, essentially, with my mom doing a lot of the nursing when I was 10 or 12. And experiencing a death close up like that was amazing. I'm not proud of the elation I felt at the killing of bin Laden. How do I reconcile this joy relief with my belief in the dignity and worth of all people? The question that we kind of had last service, I thought it might be bin Laden. So for me, I did not feel a sense of joy, and I regret the celebration. There were fireworks in my neighborhood. That just doesn't work for me. But I also feel like in 2001, this one I did share at the first service. In 2001, with the invasion of Afghanistan, I said, I think we need to look at the fight against terrorism as a legal battle, as law enforcement. In law enforcement, you try to find out who you think the criminal was, you try to find out where they are, and then you try to apprehend them. I think that's what we did with bin Laden. Would have been a little easier if he actually had more evidently resisted arrest to justify the shooting. But I also don't know if I was in that position, I would assume he'd shoot, and I have a hard time. I can't condemn our military for the way they carried that out. But to me, it was a law enforcement thing. So when someone's caught, on the whole, I think that's a good thing. You're very diplomatic, but in your heart of hearts, do you ever think, how can any rational person really believe that Christ died on a cross and came back to life for our sins? I can believe that a rational person can do that because I know rational people who believe that and act in a brilliant way in the way they live their lives. So to me, that's that. I mean, we believe that everybody has inherent worth. There's no evidence to that effect, is there? I mean, there's people like bin Laden. And yet I believe that, and I hope I would lay down my life for that. But it's irrational in many ways. I'll lose an argument every time on that one. Hitler, bin Laden, you know, okay. But somehow I think in there's inherent dignity and worth. That's faith, and to me that's a life-giving faith if I use it correctly to give back. Same with a belief in Jesus can be life-giving. I've seen it. Have you ever stolen everything? Anything? Yes. The story I have is that I stole a brochure on Mackinac Island when I was about 10. But I didn't know it was for sale. I thought it was free. And so halfway, you know, you bike around the island, halfway around I see 50 cents. So I felt so bad I had to go back and pay and apologize and all that. So I'm just not a stealer type. But that brush with the law really got to me. So that's all I can say on that. So who is your favorite celebrity and why? Here's the person that comes back to the ethics and politics question. My favorite is someone who's heard of, he's dead now, but Philip Hart. He was a senator from Michigan. Anybody? He was the best. Yep, all right. Phil Hart was a senator who had so much integrity, and I got to meet the guy once and shake his hand, and I just thought he was the best. One of the Senate office buildings is named for this guy. Politically liberal, kind of maverick, and yet his colleagues loved him enough to name a building after him. So that's the guy that I would say, Phil Hart. That's it. So, thank you. Great questions. We actually do have some time if there's follow-up. Any responses? I see B back there. Karen's going to get you the mic.
I'm B. Alford. No, I just noticed a lot of things, your answers came from when you're about 10 years old.
I noticed that too.
Yeah, so I'm like, what's up with that?
Yeah. Must have been a really formative time of life. Yeah. Which I do think had something to do with my grandpa's death. That brought me to another level. Yeah. We'll get to Barbara. I really lament that in our society, we don't get to, as kids especially, experience much about death. You know, it's people go to hospitals. We might see a body or not at a funeral. It's just like, I've used the analogy more before. I picked it up from this funeral director, Thomas something or other. But that it's like the flush toilet invention. We just get that stuff away from us. But that there's some things we could learn in there. So I was really blessed to have that experience as a kid. Barbara.
This is a personal question, Roger. It may be because I've been working on the curriculum about words and violence and how people use words to create violence or to incite violence. But just in the last while, it's been really difficult to keep an equilibrium because I watched the thing with Anthony Weiner, and I don't care, but how he was hounded and hunted, and it went on and on. And now there's, you know, the Casey Anthony case where people are fighting outside to get in to watch this horrible spectacle of someone's life being dismembered. And I mean, so my question is how to keep an equilibrium when there seems to be so much darkness, human shadow, cynicism in the world. How does one keep one's balance in this atmosphere?
Yeah, thank you. Great question. I think it's really hard for me. And I have to come back to, and it's why we did a lot this year on spiritual practice. For me, that's the way to stay grounded, to be aware of what I'm grateful for, to keep perspective. And if I don't do that, then it's way, way harder. So, and I think as you use, we don't like to hear about like a spiritual discipline. Discipline? That doesn't sound like us, you know. But if we don't make it an everyday thing in our lives, I don't know how we do it. I just don't know. And I know from experience, because there's times when I don't do it for vast stretches, and it makes it so much harder. So much harder. Thank you. Yeah. Is that Dawn? Yep.
Roger, we close every service with a deeper understanding of life's mystery. One day I know what mystery is to me because it's such an intangible, and the next day I don't. Could you talk a little bit about how you feel about that word?
I love that word because I never know what it means. You know, but again, I come back to there's something greater than me. And I don't completely understand it, but I know it's greater than me. That's mystery. It's interesting when we do those closing words, some of you make mystery plural. Have you noticed that? And I've been wrestling with that, thinking, I kind of like that. So maybe we'll make it plural. Debbie Andrews actually put those words together, sort of incorporating our old words, right? So let's talk about that. Let's talk, all of us, about that. That's an interesting thing, because none of us knows what mystery really is, right? So we have different understandings today, tomorrow. My understanding will change. I kind of like making it plural. Chuck and I saw Jenny. Did you have yours too? Okay. We'll do these two, and I think that'll do it.
In years past, if I heard correctly, I think you expressed some favorable feelings or interest in Christian thinking, saying that you were a UU minister, but this was of some interest to you. Where do you stand on that now?
Yeah, I would still say, for me, primarily Christianity, Buddhism, Hinduism, and indigenous, especially Native American spiritualities are most important to me. Yeah. But I shared, and you'll be interested in this because Chuck likes Taoism, but that's one I'm really intrigued with, and I'm grateful to Dottie for teaching me a lot about it. So it's an open book. Jenny, last one.
Hi, my name is Jenny Strait. My spiritual life is driven mostly by the teachings of the Buddha. And one of the things, I just came back to your thoughts, Barb, about, you know, this really, Thich Nhat Hanh refers to it as poison. What's out, what's available to be consumed. So not, you know, thinking in terms not just of food or, you know, drugs, alcohol, whatever. There's poison to be consumed in the dang courthouse for Casey Anthony, not to mention their front yard. If you've ever seen the people get really ugly and beating on each other in their front yard of the grandparents. So my suggestion is to make choices about where to cut that off, and that's where the teachings come in, is we need to be mindful of the consumption, regardless of where it comes from, of whether it brings poison or not. But sometimes something like that, what somebody else might consider poison, might be impetus or incentive for somebody to do something positive. So we can't even blanket statement that. Mm-hmm. But my own choice, I don't watch the news.
Thank you. That's a great answer. And mindfulness, that is what it comes down to me. What do we take in? How do we deal with it? How do we act based on who we are? Okay. Thank you. I will say, I think we'll try to podcast both of these because there really was only one common question, which is amazing. That's why I actually don't try to predict these, although I did think there might be a Bin Laden question. So check it out if you're interested in hearing a bunch of different questions. And happy Father's Day to all the fathers. I meant to say that earlier. And again, I love you. So let's do the closing hymn.